Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly believes OPM Director John Barry doesn't have to go far to learn some important lessons about implementing pay-for-performance. The first-term Democrat says when he was chairman of the Fairfax County, Virginia Board of Supervisors, the county moved 12,000 employees onto a new system. And from that experience come several do's and several don'ts that agencies' heads should follow. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller is here with us right here, right now, live to tell us what those lessons are. So what did Congressman Connolly say about his experience with pay-for-performance there in Fairfax County?
He points to three really big lessons. The first one deals with the pace of the rollout of any type of pay-for-performance, Congressman Connolly says.
You got to go slow. You got to make sure that you get buy-in, and that means the employees themselves have to have lots of opportunities to help shape what kind of program this is going to be and to vet their concerns thoroughly.
He says that any pay-for-performance system must be credible, and to do that, there are some things that really agencies must do.
You've done everything you can to minimize subjectivity in the evaluations of performance, and that B, should you feel as the person evaluated, you were not treated fairly, there's a clear appeals process that's fair, equitable, and your concerns will be heard.
And finally, Congressman Connolly says agencies must have these, what he calls, occasional pay adjustments based on market changes. Now, these are not raises per se, but, you know, if the market is all of a sudden giving software developers a big raise and there's software developers in the government, they got to be in the ballpark. Otherwise, you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think around pay-for-performance, that is not considered. I think that was one of the complaints around some of the systems.
Does he have any thoughts about how pay-for-performance compares to other human capital priorities?
He sees it as really one big piece of a larger puzzle. Now, he says that the entire federal HR system really must be modernized.
And if you're going to appeal to the younger workforce, you're going to have a more flexible workplace and make it a lot easier to become a federal worker. It's way too complicated. And you got to make for an attractive workplace. And that means we've got to address a whole bunch of things that culturally have been uncomfortable historically for the federal employment sector. For example, flex hours, telework, making it easier for people. And we've introduced a lot of legislation. We'll do all these things. But, you know, make it easier for people when they have a kid to take some leave. Make it easier for people if they want to return to federal service to pick up where they left off without going through all kinds of machinations.
Now, I also spoke with John Desenberg from the Performance Institute, and he does agree with the congressman in a number of ways around the federal HR system. He says there are several reasons that the HR system in the federal government has been stagnant.
Recently, as I've been working with HR staffs, they sometimes go into their desk drawer and pull out the old HR manual, which is no longer updated or supported, but they're still using it because there's nothing else for them to turn to. They're all, you know, dog-eared and tabbed, but yet it's no longer actually the official manual. And so we have a real issue with the muscle of the HR world has left us. Just as if you stop going to the gym, you forget how to lift weights. If you stop hiring people for many years, you forget how to do it.
Now, Desenberg also adds that for too long, management has not been seen as really a profession or a function of government that has been ignored too much. It really needs to be treated in a manner where there's training around managers and metrics. And we've all heard the story around, well, you're pretty good at whatever technical job is. Mm-hmm. Now you're the manager.
Right.
And that's not always the way to develop management. And you need training, you need courses. So I think that's one of the areas he sees as a pitfall.
Now, there's always this question, do you deal with all these issues through legislation or can the executive branch deal with it on their own? Was there any discussion about where that should, and there's all sorts of bills up on the Hill.
Correct.
How do you deal with it?
I asked him actually that same question. I mean, and Congressman Connolly says he's mixed. He says, you know, OPM can do a lot through policy, but there is room for legislation. As you said, we've seen several bills in the last few months. He says Congress, but really what Congress can't do is legislate cultural change to really just change those rules. That has to come from OPM, has to come from the managers, and this is especially important as the workforce gets younger. Now, we've all heard about the brain drain that's coming, and you know, I don't know if that's actually happening. The statistics.
Been hearing about it forever.
Exactly. The statistics are showing that it's not as deep as quickly as you maybe we've heard. But Congressman Connolly says, listen, no matter what, people are going to retire. We know that. And as new people come in, we have to incentivize the system to deal with these challenges. One example is contracting, he says. The retention issue around project and program managers specifically is tough. He says we need to treat people fairly. We want to make them want to work for the government. They want to, you know, show them that the system appreciates the job that they do. So there's several things that can be done, not just from a legislative but a policy way as well.
Well, speaking of incentives, you know, the first flu bill, you know, cashing out your unused sick leave when it's time for you to retire, that didn't make it into the tobacco bill. The Senate has stopped debate. They're supposed to vote on it tomorrow. So did Congressman Connolly look into his crystal ball and sort of talk about the likelihood of that actually making it into law? That's really important.
Sure. And he said that he was surprised that the Senate really didn't pass the amendment.
My understanding is this: Mr. DeMint from South Carolina decided this wasn't appropriate on a tobacco bill. I can't for the life of me understand why not. There's lots of items that we on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee put into that bill to address these federal workplace issues. I think they're perfectly appropriated. Some of them were financially offset, frankly, like the first reannuitant amendment I had, with tobacco money, savings from this tobacco bill. So I think it's the perfect place to do it, and I would hope we could restore it in conference.
Now, this may be one of several issues that may be dealt with through the conference committee. I mean, look at paid parental leave that we've talked a lot about over the past week. There was a lot of pushback by the House Republicans before the House eventually passed it. And as we know, it's always tougher to get things done in the Senate. They need that 60 vote, that magic number.
Right.
And if
herding cats.
Yes, and you, it's funny because the more I talk to House members, you say, well, what's going on in the Senate? Oh, who knows? I never know what's going on over there. So, yeah, they do have that kind of competition. But I think a lot of this, you know, and don't forget, a lot will happen between now and the end of the year. And as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year, as we get closer to September 30th, personnel issues become less important than budget issues. And you may get some changes folded into authorization bills or appropriations bills. But, you know, as we know, we've seen many times, Congress's attention shifts as we get closer to September 30th, as we get into the new fiscal year, because they got to get those budget bills passed.